You are listening to the cycling podcast De Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyons Run. Stage 11, today we are in Urdax.
Well, Daniel, where are we?
We're just outside Pamplona. We're in the El Toro Hotel, the Bull.
Lots of statues of bulls outside. It's a lovely place, isn't it? And we're sharing with two teams tonight, Astana and Bahrain Merida.
We are, but we will be eating in the double Michelin-starred restaurant. They will not.
They will not, indeed.
Will the budget stretch that far? Probably not.
I mean, it doesn't feel like the sort of place with that quality of restaurant, but that apparently is what it is, which is extraordinary. I'm glad we're not eating with those teams because I'm a bit red-faced around both those teams at the moment, really, having gone and queued, waited for a while at Bahrain Merida this morning to interview Jon Izagirre. And when somebody appeared out the bus, I said, any chance of a word with Jon Izagirre today? And the guy kind of looked at me blankly and said, he rides for Astana. Of course, he rode for us, Bahrain Merida, last year. They move around a lot, don't they? The Izagirre
boys, yeah. They've been there before, haven't they? They've been at Astana before, haven't
they? Did they go to Astana? They went Movistar, Astana, Bahrain, back to Astana. Is that right?
I think so.
Oh, dear. Oh, well, anyway, I was in a bit of a daze. Anyway, beautiful stage today, stage 11. From the French side of the Basque Country into the Spanish side of the Basque Country, or the Basque Country. And back again, nipped across the border. Peter Cousins wrote a nice little piece.
I'm wrong about the whole Izagirre.
I mean, I just went with Astana yo-yo.
A few people have done that, though. They've left Astana and then gone back to Astana later.
Mm. Well, anyway, let's move on from that. Let's just, if you see an Izagirre in the bar, Daniel, let me know. And at least I did get an interview with Jon Izagirre. I didn't manage to mixed him up with his brother, which was a result. Anyway, Peter Cousins wrote a nice little piece about today's stage on his own website. I think you can look that up. But it was beautiful, wasn't it? Three climbs today. Really, I suppose what the Vuelta would call a transition stage, because it was neither flat nor mountainous. It was just challenging. Three categorized climbs. A big breakaway went away pretty early. It included Angel Madrazo, the King of the Mountains, Remy Cavagna, included some riders from the local teams, Jessica de Murias and Caja Rural, including Lawson Craddock, Damien Housen, Gorka Izagirre, and a couple of riders from Caja Rural. Ben O'Connor was there as well for Dimension Data. Eventually it started to break up. They got about 14 minutes, even more than that, I think, in the end. So Jumbo Visma are very happy to see them go off and fight for the stage. It started to break up quite a lot. The attackers included Gorka Izagirre, was one of the early attackers. Lawson Craddock was up there. Damien Housen was there too. And a very promising young Basque rider, Alex Aramburu, who rides for Caja Rural, who I think is joining Astana next year, I believe. He was impressive. He was first up the Category 2 climb at 123 kilometres. They called it Ispegui. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Roughly, I think so, yeah.
Roughly.
There's some fantastic names of climbs in the Basque Country. The best one, which the race didn't go over today, is the Col de Bourdurincheta, I think.
Speaking of names, Daniel, can you tell me...
No, I know what you're going to ask already, and I was waiting for you to get to that in the news roundup.
Yeah, one of the attackers, Emmanuel, from Dimension Data.
Come on.
From Eritrea, he is.
Born in Ethiopia, I think.
You're right, he was born in Ethiopia, yeah.
Addis Ababa.
And he now represents Eritrea, and is from Eritrea. Gebre Gezabie.
We'll go with that.
He was up there in a little breakaway, and...
He has a bit of a knack of going very well in the Basque Country on the Vuelta. Last year, he came very close to taking Eritrea's first World Tour I think it's that it would be their first World Tour win, would it? I don't think Mihaly Kudus is winning the World Tour. Certainly their first major tour win at the Balkan de Biscaya.
A group formed at the front of Izagiri, Aramburu, Lawson Craddock, Damien Housen, Emmanuel, Francois Bidar from AG2R Le Mondial, and Mathieu Fabro from Katusha Alpecin. And a guy who was off the back at that point was Mikel Ituria from Euskadi Murias, the local team, the Basque team, which is under threat for next year. Not sure whether they'll carry on or not. Ituria was off the back a bit. He seemed to get dropped on the climb, and then he attacked and got away and went from quite far out. And the lead coming into the last sort of 10Ks was very small. And over the last 5Ks, it was 15, 20 seconds. And amazingly, he held off. And there might have been reasons for that, for a lack of cooperation behind and so on. But a very, very popular win, obviously, for Ituria in the Basque Country. And a very important win for his team, I would have thought. And amazing that he managed to hold off some of the World Tour teams.
Absolutely, Rich. And an extremely important win for that team, Euskadi Murias, because their future is far from secure for next year. I understand they've had some good news over the last week or so, or some encouragement from a potential backer, or it could even be the current backer. But certainly today will help their cause. I saw Jon Odriozola, the team manager, at the finish, and he was cock-a-hoop.
I spoke to him, actually. He speaks a little bit of English, and he said that for the moment they're just focusing on the Vuelta. But yeah, the riders have apparently been told they can look for other teams, so it doesn't sound great. The other Basque team, of course, is Mikel Landa's team, the Euskadi Foundation team, which he's hoping that steps up that team eventually, and maybe one day even he could ride for it. He'll probably ride for He's riding for Barry Murray. They probably go to Astana for a bit again and end up perhaps at his own team.
The fastest clothing in the World Tour. The home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyons Run.
Thank you very much to our headline sponsor, Rafa. Very grateful to them for their support. And I do keep meaning to watch their Leadville Gone Racing film, which you'll find on their YouTube channel and on rafa.cc. I haven't had the time yet. I think I'm going to have the time tomorrow morning, actually, so I want to catch up with that. Maybe even tonight after our delicious meal. I didn't quite finish my tale of the tapa. Jonathan Lastra was second on the stage today for a 1-2 for the Pro Continental teams, Carrural rider.
Can I also add an erratum to the
another one to the tennis well tapa tonight?
The name of the climb in the Basque Country that I mentioned earlier is even more complex and convoluted than I thought. It's the Col de Budin Trurecheta.
Good. Lawson Craddock was third on stage, Damien Housen fourth, Francois Bidar fifth. And I'll not go any further than that. No changes on GC. The bunch came in a long, long, long way down.
Very much like the last time the Vuelta finished in the same town. When Valeria Conti won and the bunch came in that day, I think about 20 minutes down.
And yeah, they were led in by Lennart Hofsted, the Dutch rider on Team Jumbo-Visma, 18 minutes 35 down. And it was interesting because, you know, they were going for, what, 15th place. But it kind of shows you how, I guess, resigned the sprinters are to not contesting for the point jersey, because there was no sprint. The Jumbo-Visma riders just rolled across the line, holding the first sort of 5-6 positions, which it would never happen at the Tour de France, would it?
No, I thought today I saw Sam Bennett sign on, and was thinking about the sort of conversations we were having about him and his programme at the start of the year, and it looked at one stage as though he might not do any Grand Tours, but he really has been given a raw deal with the Vuelta, hasn't he? Because there are so few opportunities. There are a couple actually in the last week, but he's going to have had to survive an awful lot of mountains to get to that point. It's not been easy.
Yeah, if they'd had three straws, Bora Hansgrohe, he drew the shortest one of the three, didn't he? But yeah, I mean, you know, from the race point of view, not an awful lot happened today. Are there many more stages like this, or because these are unusual transition stages in that they are challenging, testing, but not there are days where the overall contenders can do kind of switch off.
I would say almost no more days like this, Rich. Tomorrow, there's a stage in the Basque Country which is going to be very different, much more of the kind of stage we're used to seeing in the Tour of the Basque Country, with some very steep climbs in the finale on the way into Bilbao. Primoz Roglic always wins in the Basque Country. His first appearance in the Tour of the Basque Country, he won a stage in Bilbao, which went over one of the climbs the race is going over tomorrow, the Vivero. And he won the overall last year in the Basque Country. I spoke to him actually tonight about racing the Basque Country. Confirmed he loves it. Tomorrow is going to be a day when his leadership will be, well, someone will try to threaten him and Jumbo-Visma. Someone will try to put him under pressure tomorrow.
I'm working on a Kilometre Zero about the Basque Country, actually. That will come out on Friday. And today's Kilometre Zero was called Axel's Alumni, and it featured 9 of the 10.
Another erratum.
Another, oh, God. Nine of the 10 riders who are riding the Vuelta who once rode for Axel Merckx's development team, which has been going since 2009. Ben King was the first rider they ever signed when it was Trek Livestrong. But there are lots of others. And
what happened to the other Ben King? There used to be another Ben King, didn't there? Australian who rode for maybe rode for the same
Astana
team. No, he didn't ride for Astana.
But I missed out somebody. I counted 9 riders in this race who'd ridden for Merckx's development team. I missed out Clément Chevrier, who's spotted himself that he was missing from the photograph that we used to promote the episode. So I'm going to have to go and apologise to Clément, and Theo Gegenhardt's been giving me a hard time for that as well. So I think I'm going to have to find him and apologise.
Bribe him with a Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt.
That's a good shout. Yeah, that is a really good idea. We'll have to go through the proper procedure for that. So
pretend that people have voted.
If you would like, it's all very transparent, Daniel. If you would like to nominate Clément Chevrier for his very charming pointing out of my omission, then do so, please. We will be looking for Pedaleurs de Charme later in the week. One guy that I spoke to at the finish was the rider who won the bunch sprint today, Lennard Hofstede, the Dutch rider, who's he's 24 years old, still quite young, but it's his third Grand Tour. So he's ridden a few Grand Tours in the past, but he is a very important rider on a stage like today. Did a lot of work today with Tony Martin at the front, just to keep the pace at a reasonable level. I also was keen to speak to him because I stood behind him in the queue for the cable car in Andorra, and he looked in a bit of distress. And Adi Engels, the sports director, came up and had his arm around him and was telling him lots of encouraging words. He looked very cold and kind of miserable. So I was keen to find out what the story was there, and I spoke to him at the finish.
How was today, first day helping Roglic defend the lead?
Yeah, really good actually. I was struggling all week since the crash in the TTT, and then I had an easy rest day and also an easy time trial day, and my body really needed that. But still I feel that the pain which was there since the crash, it's not gone. So I have to use some painkillers and live with that. But still, I think it was a good day. Tony and me controlled it. There was never any trouble, so good day.
Are you looking ahead to... It's still a long way to go in this race. It could be a lot of days like that with you sitting at the front with Tony Martin.
Yeah, I know. But I'm for sure really happy it's Tony, because he can ride long pools. Behind him, you're out of the wind. But to be honest, I don't look further than day by day. This is already a big kind of bonus for me that I could pull all day, and I don't look further than tomorrow.
I was actually standing with you at the top of the mountain the other day when we were waiting for the cable car, and you and a lot of other riders looked, you know, cold and quite fed up. That was quite a tough day and quite a tough end to that day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a really, really hard day for me. I forgot my painkillers, and then I was really scared to go out. But in the end, I made it. But I don't know. It looked really shit, but I was completely at ease. I was like, okay, it's like this. In the end, we were at 1 o'clock in the hotel. But yeah.
I saw Adi Engels was talking to you for a bit, trying to reassure you, I think, as you were waiting for the cable car.
Yeah. He said good job, and just go with the cable car. In the end, that could have gone better down by bike, but yeah, you never know.
our listeners ask questions like this. When you say painkillers, what sort of painkillers are you taking?
Yeah, actually, it's just paracetamol. I don't like to take painkillers, and the heavy stuff, I just don't like it. So it's only paracetamol.
And it's seen you through the race so far.
Yeah, so far it got me through the race.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
The familiar voice of Seb Piquet interrupts our coverage of the Vuelta a España to remind me to tell you that tonight's episode is sponsored by Roca. Roca was founded in 2013 in a garage in Austin, Texas, with the mission to create the world's finest performance gear and eyewear. 6 years and 30 plus patents later, Roca athletes have won numerous world titles and stages at the Tour de France, worn the leader's jersey at the Vuelta a España and the Giro d'Italia, and conquered the famous gravel of Dirty Kanza. Every pair of Roca eyewear is unbelievably lightweight. They will never slip or fall off your face, and they feature razor sharp optics. I can confirm this. I had never previously purchased a pair of sunglasses, having not tried them on. I'd always gone through that awful ritual in sunglass shops, opticians, of trying on the glasses with the little security tags on them, usually in those little mirrors, and not being able to decide which ones I like best. I ordered these online, having obviously not tried them on. I got the leisure glasses I got with the Barton, and they arrived, and they fit extremely well, and look very nice as well. Roca do make a big play of how lightweight their glasses are, and that's certainly the case. You do forget that you're wearing them. And the Gecko technology on the temples and the nose pieces really make them stick to your face, but not in an unpleasant way. So they're very comfortable indeed as well. Roca say that their glasses are the lightest, most advanced eyewear in the peloton. And they're offering 20% off your order. If you go to roca.com/Vuelta, you can claim 20% off. That's roca.com, roka.com/Vuelta. Daniel, a question for you.
I've got a question for you first.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what makes your Clément Chevrier omission even more heinous?
I don't know if it could be more heinous.
I suspect he's from the same French city as your wife.
Oh my goodness. Why do you suspect that?
I don't know exactly where Virginie was born, but I suspect she was born there.
You're right. Oh my God, I just looked it up. Oh wow. Well, she wasn't born. Yeah, well, she, yeah. Oh, that's terrible. Oh, my goodness. Oh, question for you, Daniel.
Yes.
Which teams were missing from today's break? Team Ineos were missing.
Yeah.
Which was a surprise, I think.
Jumbo-Visma.
Well, you'd expect them to be missing, wouldn't you? But, you know, even teams with GC ambitions, and Movistar had somebody there. Astana obviously had somebody there. So I was quite surprised that Ineos didn't have anybody there. One guy who was there as well was Damien Housden from Michelin Scott. And he is a guy who is often riding in the service of others. He's been in teams supporting the Yates twins in the past, but obviously given a bit of freedom today to go in the break, and I spoke to him about what that was like at the finish.
You surprised he was able to stay away? I mean, can you describe those closing kilometres?
He hit us from a long distance from the finish, just over 20k I think it was, and he was also in the group behind a select group of five that made it over the toughest part of the course together. So we probably all underestimated how strong he was going, and yeah, you see in the tactics we're all attacking each other. We can close 30 seconds down pretty quick, but as soon as no one goes on with it, the gap goes back out to where it was, and that's what played into his hands today.
I mean, it looked a fully committed chase, but did it feel like that behind?
No, definitely it wasn't a committed chase from all people. I think there was a big difference between the strongest in the group behind, those who really wanted to gamble and not do too much work at all, and other guys that were probably on their complete limit and couldn't really contribute to the chase. So all of that together resulted in the win of the Mureas rider that stayed away today.
We see you in the Grand Tours in a team role a lot of the time. Did you enjoy being up the road and in the action today?
Yeah, I did. It was fun. It was a pretty aggressive start. Some narrow roads, twisty roads and uphill roads. So at the time, our group went away. There was a bit of a fall. I think Esteban was actually involved in that. And most teams were represented. And the two teams, obviously, that wasn't there, gave a bit of an effort immediately to chase. But once they realised the gap was already over 2 minutes, they conceded and obviously you're going to save it for another day.
Daniel, we should acknowledge Mikel Iturria's win today, which was pretty extraordinary, especially after he'd been off the back. I mean, we heard from Damien Housen there saying that there wasn't really a lot of cooperation behind it. It looked watching it like they were chasing hard at times, but when they were, they weren't really eating into his lead at all. He rode extremely well. I mean, it was a really well taken win.
Yeah, it was one of those days when it was almost frustrating to watch the chase, because every time they seemed to start collaborating and find a decent rhythm, then someone would break it with an attack. And the attacks were pretty constant for the last 40 or 50 kilometres, and that really didn't help their cause, did it, in the end? A couple of them were probably lacking a bit of punch. I think when they came to that final, the sort of final rise with about 1.5 kilometres to go, Housen and our Eritrean friend, Emmanuel. They were in a good position there, and Housen was waiting for Emmanuel to come through. This is terribly embarrassing. It's shambolic. However, he didn't, and it really came down to that one sort of missed turn, didn't it? Because I think had they got within, they probably got within 40 meters. Had they got within 20 meters, it would have been game over.
And, for a lot of people, the sort of Euskadi name is, reminds them of the Euskadi days of the orange clad supporters and team. And that's something that's missing. The teams now, those professional pro teams, the orange is missing, but also that kind of flagship, isn't it? I mean, they are. Relatively speaking, minnows these teams and fighting for their survival, and with the UCI reforms, finding it even harder to survive. I mentioned earlier on Axel Merckx's development team, which has been pro Conti for a couple of years, stepping back to continental level next year because the costs of being a pro Conti team next year are going to be even higher with minimum number of riders and pay and so on. It's just prohibitively expensive for a lot of sponsors.
Maybe they need to go down the Gianni Savio route of signing people to 44-year contracts.
And then
forcing the World Tour teams to buy them out for vast sums.
It's a good business model. Daniel, a guy that I know you spoke to this morning and who I was keen to speak to was Carl Fredrik Hagen, the young Norwegian rider. Now, he's not the youngest, but I was surprised when I spoke to him to realise just how inexperienced
started road cycling in 2015.
I know, we're going to hear that in a moment because I did speak to him. We had an email actually today from Rolf Erik Birkness. Apologies if I've said that incorrectly, but the email is headlined "A Rare Norwegian Climber," and he points out that although Norway is a very mountainous country, they have not produced many climbers, which is strange.
No, and it's quite extraordinary that they've produced, all of their main riders have been in exactly the same mold. Christoph, Boassenhagen, Husov, they've been almost sort of interchangeable in their abilities.
In my third error of the day, I replied to Rolf Erik's email from the podcast email account saying Richard spoke to him this morning for tonight's podcast, and then I signed the email Richard, so basically I meant to sign it from all of us. Anyway, that was just another error. One of these things come in threes, don't they? Let's hear from Carl Fredrik Hagen, the 27-year-old at Lotto Soudal now.
You must be very happy.
Yeah, for sure. I'm happy. It's a little bit more than I expected because I'm, first of all, here for learning, and it's my first Grand Tour and also my first season as a pro. So I had some opportunities the last week, and I took them, and my legs was good, and I also felt better day by day. So yeah, then just try to save energy and ride.
You got a lot of people following you back home because it's a country where people are very keen on cycling and their riders. Is there a lot of interest back home?
Yeah, the interest of cycling is bigger and bigger in Norway. They are used to have the sprinters like Christoph and Boasenhagen, and not the GC riders. So no, they are also following a little bit more in the mountains, and that's nice.
Can you tell me a bit about your background in sport?
I started with running, and then I switched over to cross-country skiing. And then when I was 22 years old, I switched over to mountain biking, did that for 2 years. And in 2015, then I rode my first season on the road. So it's 4 years ago.
Wow. So you're still new to the sport, really. I mean, you must be surprising yourself here. What are your ambitions now here?
No, my ambition is to finish in Madrid, first of all. But I don't want to give this position easy for me, so I want to keep fighting every day, taking day by day, but yeah, we will see.
Well, Rich, he's ridden this Vuelta a la Atapuma, hasn't he?
Maybe one day we'll see a la Hagen.
Maybe. A la Atapuma, of course, it's quite a convoluted tale of how we coined that phrase, but it's kind of the opposite of riding a la Zubeldia, isn't it? A la Zubeldia is... sort of flying under the radar
race
and sort of finishing every stage in 11th, 13th place and then finishing 9th on general classification without having been noticed by anyone the whole race. A la Atapuma is sort of losing a lot of time early in the race and in such a fashion that you're given freedom to get into a break. That's what Hagen did on the stage at Igualada, got himself back into general classification. Don't think he thinks he's going to stay there. Don't think he thinks he's going to stay in the top 10. But yeah, I remember the Lotto Soudal training camp in the winter in Mallorca. His name, it sort of came up in, you know, just conversations with the management there about who might sort of surprise us this year. And Hagen was an intriguing story, came from winter sports and no one really knew what he was going to be capable of. But I remember Mark Sargeant saying how untypically Norwegian he was, in the sense that he was incredibly outgoing, extroverted, even from his first training camps. And that had already been a bit of a pleasant surprise for the team. And they also felt that he was someone who could really go on any kind of terrain, go quite well. But he was... a sort of story waiting to be written. They didn't know what kind of rider he might become, and it looks as though, although as I said, he'll probably fall out of the top 10 on general classification, he's got some potential as a GC rider.
Yeah, he rode okay at the Dauphiné this year. He was third on stage. That was won by Dylan van Baarle.
He used to be a good footballer as well, but he quit football because he was played out of position. He was played right back. I mean, he's the Ainsley Maitland-Niles of the pro peloton. That means absolutely nothing.
Nothing. But it's a bit of a Mike Woods type story as well. You know, he's come to it late, so his margin for improvement, even at 27, is probably still quite high. He's only 4.59 down on GC. As you say, he'll probably slip further down, but he seems to be enjoying himself. A very cheerful, pleasant sort of guy, it seems. So, yeah, another one to look out for.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
My name's Owen Dool and I ride for Team Ineos. My favourite science and sport product is the fruit salad gel. Especially here in Spain for the Vuelta and the heat, it's perfect, it's refreshing, and it's my go-to.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast. And 25% off all your Science and Sport products with the code SISCP25, SISCP25, at scienceandsport.com. We're going to hear from our writers' diaries in a moment, Nick Schultz and James Knox. They've obviously been going through some of your questions. James has answered a few of them. Keep them coming. They obviously like the left field ones. Nick Schultz obviously knows this area very well. He rode for Cal Rural before he joined Mitchelton Scott, so he knows this part of the world extremely well, and I think enjoyed today's stage.
That's 11 stages down and we're past halfway, so nice little feeling thinking about that. Yeah, it was a straightforward day in the end. Still a big fight to get in the break. We went pretty hard up those first little bumps on a narrow, quite hard roads. Our man, Cavagna after a good time trial, got up the road and fought for the victory. It wasn't to be, but it was quite nice seeing Murias Uscardi winning on home roads, a smaller team. But yeah, Uscardi today in the French Basque Country, really, really beautiful actually. Green, rolling hills, up and down all day, but yeah, pretty nice scenery actually. Was able to enjoy it even though the pace was pretty uncomfortable at times. Witnessed a masterclass from Tony Martin behind us riding the front all day. Really impressive, even if the breakaway did get a whole gang of time ahead of the bunch, but it's not easy riding the front like that all day. Yeah, not an awful lot to talk about really today. Not really a lot happened. I felt the legs from yesterday's time trial, but hopefully getting today out of the way helps clear the legs a little bit, because yeah, I did go hard yesterday. I'm looking forward to the rest of the week now, some more, getting back into the hills again, get through tomorrow, and then getting some hard stages again. Spent a lot of day catching up with different people, having some good chats. Maybe I should have a look at the questions and see what the people are asking. I've got one interesting routine that's become a real force of habit here at the Vuelta. One of those people who start suffering with hot and comfortable feet after a full day in the saddle. And I'm developing this new technique. We've got this nice, like, minty fresh cream that's... I'm not really sure. It says it's just sort of like a cream for muscles, but I've been slapping that all over my feet every morning, and I've been getting a couple of the other lads... Well, they saw me doing it inside laughing, and then I got a couple of people to try it, and I seem to be making converts. Just getting my feet as moist as possible, and keeping them light and airy for a couple of hours really makes the day better, you know? Little things, the little things matter. Right, I'm gonna have a little look at questions now and then fire a couple of them at you. We've got some people asking about thoughts about my current position and what to expect coming up. I guess, yeah, sitting in 20th position in GC after 11 days is as good as I could hope for, really, you know? Struggled a bit at the start of the race with some of the punchy climbs and hot weather. I just can't really put my finger on it, just wasn't. Struggled a bit anyway, more than usual, but then, you know, Andorra gave me a big boost to the confidence, you know, for whatever reason. Feeling a lot more comfortable in those long climbs. And I guess that really sort of sums up my expectations for the rest of the race. Excited to sort of try and push on again on some of those bigger mountain days. You know, I'm not really looking forward quite as much to like Los Muchachos and other punchy climbs like that, but if I can get in the break or hang on to the big guns on the long climbs, that would be really my aims for the rest of the race. Seem to be where I've excelled so far. And a nice question about thoughts on being 6 points on Velo Games. I'd say that's fair. You know, I'm happy not to be four. I'll take six. I don't really deserve to be eight or more just yet. So for now, six is a fair score. I best like doing a bit more to deserve any more than that. So, and anyone taking a punt on me, respect it, but might have not been the smartest choice.
Okay, stage 11 ticked off. Beautiful day today, leaving France where we've been a couple of days, where we had the rest day and the time trial, and heading into the Basque Country of Spain. Really, really beautiful area. Amazing scenery today, especially when the sky is blue. Rolling terrain up, down, left, right. Just perfect riding roads, actually. The start was quite hard up a little hill where a breakaway formed with about 12 or 15 guys, I think. We had Damien Housen in there, which was really good for us, just to take a bit of pressure off and have an opportunity for a stage win, as it was anticipated that a break would go to the line, as is the case for many of the stages to come. Once it did go, it was quite clear that Jumbo Visma were very happy to let it get a big, big gap and keep things nice and controlled in the peloton. In that scenario, it was quite a relief, I think, for the majority of the guys in the pelo, as we could just
not switch off, but take things pretty easy, relax, focus on hydrating, nutrition, and just sort of taking in the beautiful scenery, I guess. It's also a chance to catch up with other riders. So Noxie and I had a good catch up today, a lot of good banter, and we're just hanging out for that day. We're in the same hotel to do a two up podcast. Otherwise, it was a mostly uneventful day back in the peloton. Just hearing whispers every now and then of what's going on up the front, but we never really know exactly how things are unfolding or who's sort of winning the stage and all the placings. That's something we find out when we get to the finish. I'm now back at the hotel. We're in Pamplona tonight. I really love Pamplona. It's where Cajaral was based. So I've spent a bit of time here on different training camps or team get-togethers over the last couple of years, and I find Pamplona a really lovely city, with the highlight being the food. The pinchos and tapas in this area of Spain, and in particular Pamplona, is second to none. It's unreal. I would say the best Spanish food I've eaten is here in Pamplona, so it's nice to be here, and it's nice to be back in Spain as well. It's the country I call home now, and although I do love France, having spent a lot of time there, it's almost a relief to be back here in Spain. The Basque Country, which is sort of the area where we've got quite a few stages. I think we sort of traverse the Basque Country, maybe Cantabria or Asturias, sort of along the coast. So I think we can expect some temperamental weather over the next few days, but it kind of adds to the beauty of this area. And I guess you can't have a place that's beautiful and green if there's no rain. So we'll see what's on the cards, and I expect another hard start tomorrow as the breakaway will probably have a shot at victory. Cheers.
Well, that was James Knox and Nick Schultz with their latest audio diaries. Thanks very much to them. And keep your questions coming. You can find them on Twitter and send them questions that way, or through us, the cycling_podcast on Twitter. Daniel, we were in Pau again last night and we had a very nice meal.
We did. We've kind of written, I've sort of written off French cuisine over the last few years. I really have.
Much to Francois Thomaso's chagrin.
Yeah, but we've never really had it out on the podcast. We should have an hour-long debate, Francois, and I, about how incredibly overrated French food is. By far the worst Grand Tour for the culinary sense is the Tour de France. By far, it's not even in the photograph.
By the way, speaking of that, you know the question we got on the press conference about the fourth Grand Tour.
Yeah,
I got a very very amusing tweet today about from somebody saying, Daniel's suggestion of a fourth Grand Tour being in Spain. What a maverick.
Wow. I mean, anyway, last night's meal was excellent, wasn't it? Majestic in Pau. If anyone's going to Pau, a good dinner spot, not just that restaurant, but any of the restaurants in the Place Royale.
That restaurant, though, is really particularly good. We've been there before. And
we have.
The monkfish that we had
lovely monkfish,
was
we?
Excellent. And, mild curry kind of.
And in your words, the Jurançon sec, the wine that we had, was nice.
Well, I said that last night in the podcast, yeah, if you recall. We had my tasting notes.
Yeah, it was very crisp and zesty, wasn't nice. It? A bit of a revelation that was. So,
I mean, I have sort of three categories. It's nice, very nice.
Lovely. Or lovely. Or not, often get that. Lovely.
Not very nice.
Anyway, very good. But we have high hopes for this evening, don't we? The podcast has never eaten in a two-star Michelin restaurant.
Never. I don't think I've ever... I've only ever eaten in one two-star Michelin restaurant.
Could be lumpy, though, couldn't it? I looked at the menus online. We probably won't be going for the taster menu, but...
I thought it looked reasonable.
It looked reasonable for two Michelin stars. But if we're not recording tomorrow, if we've gone into liquidation before tomorrow night's podcast, don't be surprised.
I think it'll be okay. We'll keep it fairly modest. No truffles tonight. It's a night of mistakes tonight. Daniel and I have just discovered it's not a two-star Michelin restaurant. It's what is it, Daniel? The menu's
designed by someone who in another life has two Michelin stars in another restaurant in another life 30 kilometres from here.
Before we go, we should say a few thank yous to friends of the podcast. I also want to say that in tomorrow night's episode, we're going to give you some special news about the guest who's going to be joining us at our show in Harrogate during the World Championships. That's on Friday 27th of September at the Royal Hall in Harrogate. During World Championship week, you can get tickets for that at thecyclingpodcast.com. Go to live events. Maybe want to get tickets in the next 24 hours before we announce who our guest is, just before there's a rush on tickets. Daniel, you looking?
No, go on.
And so we'll give you that news tomorrow night. And we've also got our November tour tickets for that. It's from Cardiff to Belfast, Bristol, Dublin, Edinburgh, Leicester, Worcester, Cambridge, London, Manchester. I think I mentioned everywhere there. That's in November, and also tickets available at thecyclingpodcast.com live events. So thanks very much indeed to recent friends of the podcast who've signed up: Palmy Peterson, Daniel Alpin, Robert Butchert, Matt Nicholson, Toby Coombs, Richard Bazick, Anthony Alnutt, Trent Fulton, Simon Baker, and John Verko.
John Verko? Is he not busy?
No, not a different spelling.
Scott Houston, Calvin Weiss, Simon Ward, David Butcher, Fergus Halliday, Alex Trimble, Matthew McWinney, Lionel Burney, Richard Moore.
Thank you, Daniel.
Stay.